Hi, hello, it's Vin. Thank you so much for listening to The Vin and Ali Show. We've created something that we're really excited about and we want to share it with you. It's called Recalibrate. It's a 12-step process that helps you create more clarity and more alignment in your life. It's the exact approach that both Ali and I have been using to live happier lives and to achieve all of our wildest dreams in the last 7 years. It's been crazy. Being one of our loyal listeners, we wanted to share a special something with you. Visit recalibrate.online/Vin and Ali to access the course for 70% off. I hope you will check it out. Anyway, let's dive into this episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Vin and Ali podcast. If only you all heard the conversation we had just moments ago. Definitely not PG, so we'll keep that one for another time when we have a closed community.
That's how Vin got cancelled.
Now that we have your curiosity piqued, let's direct that curiosity in somewhere more useful, and let's direct it towards the book we're reviewing today.
Let's find some maturity right now.
Let's find some maturity. Yeah. The book we're reviewing now on this podcast is called Small Giants. And this one is special because this is one that I wanted to review because it's relevant to where I currently am and it's something that I'm currently pursuing in my life. So how did you find that book? Because you've read it a while back, right? Do you want to frame that book a little? Slight frame?
Yeah, I think what's really cool about this as a business book is it doesn't focus on the traditional business. Mm. And a lot of business books are about how do you get as big as you can, as fast as you can. It's all about rapid growth, especially now in recent times with tech companies and really fast scaling businesses. You know, that's generally the theory that's shared with people when it comes to business, right?
Well, I think the general thought is the only way to succeed is to expand constantly.
Invest heavily, keep growing. You know, like growth's always the key area. Whereas this book takes a different spin.
Yeah.
Where the author really looked for companies that have maintained what he terms, you know, a small giant framework. You know, and what I really picked up there is that they're more human-centered and they're just not all about getting as big and as profitable as possible as quickly as they can.
Which is why I found it so refreshing.
Yeah.
Because you're making the choice to choose, instead of growth, you choose quality and you choose connection and you choose joy. Because I wonder if I also have a false belief that if you build a really big business, there's no fun in that.
Yeah.
Like I am making that assumption. So I'm kind of calling myself out because that may be a limiting belief of mine. But as far as I can kind of see it in the world, like I often think of this, Ali. It's like when I think of like the Elon Musks or the people who have built the really big businesses, like even Jeff Bezos, do you think they're having lots of fun?
Yeah, who knows? It's got to be relative to the individual. I think there's some people out there that just have the biggest vision and they want to get there as fast as they can.
Maybe they don't care about fun. Maybe they don't care about fun.
Or maybe that is fun to them. Right?
Really?
It could be. Who knows?
Well, I just to give a little context, right? A podcast that Elon just did with Lex on their podcast, on Lex's podcast, Elon said something along the lines of, "You don't want to be me. My mind is like a storm." Storms aren't fun.
Yeah, storms aren't.
Storms aren't really fun.
Yeah, unless you love storms.
Unless you love storms.
There you go. So, I would say the question that you asked there is nearly around which model's better, right? Or like what?
Well, I'm not really saying which model's better because.
Or like, are they having fun? Like, can you have fun
can you
in
have
the
fun
alternative?
The model, yeah.
Whereas I think most, even when you read most business books and you look at most startup journeys, a lot of the time the book focuses on the early days.
Right.
Right. It focuses on when they're in the garage, when the idea first started.
And that's when it was fun, passion.
Yeah. So maybe there is a shift that happens as a business matures. It's like all things.
Yeah.
Where it settles into a different cadence and energy. And it's probably just,
Do you think businesses have to settle into that cadence or can they remain in that state of, I guess in a way it's like lust, you know, it's filled with passion, joy and excitement.
Yeah. I think it's very easy to get drawn to just what like you're expected to do as a business, which is to continuously grow. Like once you have something that works and that people want and you're solving a need and a problem, it's very natural to be like, how do I keep going? It's probably the same with everything. Like even if you think about high performance sports, it's nearly that question of, hey, am I now just good enough And is this okay? Am I happy? So I'll just stop at this level. But most people, they tend to keep optimizing and maximizing as much as they can while they're on that journey. So that's why this book is refreshing in a way. It looks at an alternative approach that is more, it's more founder driven, and it's more about aligning your business and what you do to what you love, creating a culture and all these areas that we're going to dig into a little bit deeper.
It feels a little more wholesome going down this path. Yeah. I kind of have to say right off the get-go. Yeah. It was refreshing for me too.
Yeah.
Because the only path I've ever known is keep growing, keep growing, keep growing, keep growing, right? Yeah. Whereas this is kind of saying, hey, we choose not growth, but we choose quality, connection, lifestyle.
So as you were saying that, I think just as a recommendation, if you're somebody that's looking at starting your own small business or you're maybe in the stage of your journey where you're either working within a medium-sized business or a pretty small business.
Yeah.
This book should align in some way, shape, or form.
And I want to bring up why I chose this book too. It's because even my business now, as it's growing, I'm starting to become really aware that if I grow past a certain point, I can feel myself having less fun.
Yeah.
I can feel it. Yeah. I can feel it's coming. I can feel that I'm creating with a little less freedom. I'm creating with a lot more pressure. And then I've in a way moved away from why I got into this in the first place. I got into this because I wanted to find work that feels like play.
Yep.
But then it's almost like as the business grows up and it goes from a baby to then, you know, a toddler and now like a little kid into a teenager into an adult, I feel like because with a business, you don't have to biologically age. What if you can just remain in this pocket? And this to me gives me hope. This path gives me hope because my initial intention of getting into this is finding work that feels like play. So I do want to stay in that play state. And this is the first time I've come across a book that kind of indicates, hey, you can stay a child forever, Peter Pan.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. Maybe I'm going to try this. And this is why in this chapter, I want to see what it feels like to be a small giant as opposed to just growing, growing, growing.
There's maybe a subtle bit of wisdom in what you're saying there as well. And it's aligned to values.
Mm.
Right, for you, having fun while you play the game has always been really important.
Yeah.
Right. And it's probably something that we both align on.
Yeah.
It's not just necessarily about the outcomes, right? Where there's probably a lot of people out there where their business or their work is just a means to an end so they can enjoy other aspects of their life.
Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah. And that's fine.
And that's
as well.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's good just to have that awareness. I think that, this is just one of the big drivers here that we probably do lean to that. And look, to me, it makes complete sense. And I'm sitting here across the table from you. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like if you can make your business fun and you can keep it manageable. So it's, you know, I think the other thing that you're saying here as well is sometimes when you're growing and you're getting bigger, it comes with so many more like stresses.
Weights.
And problems and weights.
Yeah.
Right? That can then, that take energy and take bandwidth that, sort of remove us from other aspects of our life that are also really important.
I think one thing to definitely bring up here is as you know, you go on your journey, our listeners go on their journey, it's important to define what you want work to be.
Yeah.
Because I think the word work, it means something different to everyone. For some people, like you would say, is it's a means to an end. Yeah. And they recognize that. Hey, I'm doing this. This is not really my passion. This is not what I love. That's okay. I'm doing this to make ends meet.
Right. And then through the day,
on Fridays, put down Saturday, my tools, Sundays,
that's it.
I'm having fun. Yep. And that balance is perfect for them. But I think as I've had the courage to be able to dream bigger and have the courage to dream my own dreams, regardless of what other people think, I've been able now to develop my own definition of work. And I just wrote a few notes down. And work for me is just, look, I firstly want to be doing something I enjoy where time melts away. And that is really playing. So A, I want to find work that feels like play. B, the thing that I'm doing, the act of me playing, I want that to somehow make the world a better place. Okay, so like these are outrageous if you think about it. And then the last one I want to do is I want to play with people I love who love playing together.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like it's just, I know I sound like a bloody four-year-old child.
This. Yeah, this is like that thing. It's like when you ask your kid when they're five, like, hey, when you grow up.
Yeah, what do you want to do? I want to play forever, Dad.
Yeah.
And this is just a sad reality of me being Peter Pan.
But no, I think it's beautiful though.
Yeah.
Like you've taken every childhood dream and you've turned it into an adult reality, which is amazing.
So, and then look, don't get me wrong. There's still moments where we're all intensely working. But I want a really large component of that to be play, right? It's like every time I do this podcast with you, I don't feel like I'm playing.
Yeah.
I'm playing with one of my best friends, right? We're playing with thoughts. We're bouncing things back and forth, right? So I think it's important to define what it means for you. And please don't listen to this and get triggered by it because your definition of work is different.
Yeah.
Have the courage to create your own definition of work. And then that leads on to, well, for me now, as I share this kind of journey, is that as the feeling of work started to change, where it felt like I wasn't really playing anymore, but I was being really serious all the time, jumping into meetings all serious all the time. You know, and one of the ways you get to know if I'm serious or not is the greasier I look, the more stressed I am. Remember that call we were on last week? I got onto this call with Ali last week. And then the moment I appeared on screen, Ali had this really straight, he was like, damn.
Like rough day?
Yeah. I was like, what are you talking about, man? No, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah, dude, I had so much grease on my face that day. I was so stressed.
Yeah, like, you looked a bit sweaty.
Yeah, it was greasy. Yeah,
put in a solid
sweat,
day.
That's a stress
day.
Grease.
Hey, no judgment. It's fine.
Yeah, you were judging.
Yeah,
you
know? A little bit. Yeah, that's okay. But
yeah.
There's a couple of things that just stood out there. And for our listeners that maybe are thinking about a business journey or embarking on one.
Yeah.
Is that if you can define what that business or your work, not only just, you know, the what of it, you know, like what your role is or what it gives you, but if you can actually define like who it turns you into and who you can become while you embark on that journey, that's such another benefit because that's what I'm hearing when you're talking about this.
Yeah.
Is that you're really using work nearly as a practice where you want to make sure that you're infusing fun and impact and all these other areas that are aligned to your values.
Mm.
And yeah, like the outcomes and having a successful business is really important. But it's also, there's a lot here in terms of the journey and how you're actually approaching it. And I've seen that firsthand with you and the way that you've executed that over the years, which is really special and really cool.
Yeah.
So, there's some cool lessons there.
Thanks, man. And as we go into this then, well, let's define what a small giant is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this book was written in a way that's very different to a lot of other books. Yeah. Other books had very clear outlines and clear takeaways, whereas this book was filled with so many stories.
Yeah.
Where, and they were fantastic, but the thing is, I think the author kind of left us to extract our own formula from what he was describing. I didn't feel like there was a set, here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this is what makes a small giant. Yeah. I mean, it kind of did, but it kind of didn't as well.
Yeah.
So I found it a little bit hard to exactly define what a small giant is.
Yep.
But let's talk about a few of the things that make you a small giant.
Yep.
And let's jam on some of the benefits of being a small giant.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Cool.
Well, look, I can kick us off with the first one.
Kick off.
The first thing that seemed really consistent with a lot of small giants that I really connected with is they decided to stay a small giant because they didn't want to move location-wise. So a lot of the businesses didn't want to, one of the businesses was, I think, Cliff Bars.
Cliff Bars, yep.
Where they didn't want to move and they stayed in, I believe, Southern California. Mm-hmm. And I really related to that because I live in South Australia.
Mm.
And like seriously, the rest of Australians all around Australia, for those of you who aren't from Australia, anytime you're from Adelaide and you tell someone you're from Adelaide in Australia, they go, oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. I'm surprised you got teeth, dear. So they tease us because even you teased us today.
I love that you're just doing this teasing as a local so I don't have to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, when we came here, Ali is like, well, what are we going to drive through the city? And people are going to go, hear ye.
I did not say this to all South Australians watching. I never would say anything
he
like
did,
that.
He absolutely said that.
Okay. Damn it.
But again, because we come from South Australia, there's a little bit of that. People go, move to Melbourne, move to Sydney. It's way better. I love Adelaide. And I connected with that because I don't want to move away from Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
I love my hometown. I love this place, right? It's special to me. My family, my friends are here. So that's one of also the main reasons why a lot of these companies in the book decided to stay small giants because they love their communities. They love where they live, right? So I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Not that that is a requirement, but that was one of the ones that the book brought up that I really connected with.
I love that notion of starting where home is. And that was the same with me with Future Golf, right? Like the first courses and the first golf clubs that we reached out to were the clubs that we really loved playing at.
In Melbourne.
You know, that were important to us. And the first community we built was, it started with my group of mates and then it expanded beyond that to other people in our state. Right? So it's like you serve that local community and potentially even your own needs. And then, yeah, you can then expand from there once you validate it in one market, which is a really cool lesson.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. And there's a beautiful bit there about impacting your local community too and improving it.
I think a lot of joy comes with that, a lot of fulfillment too, because these are people you know, right? Whereas when you grow to a certain point, sometimes the people you're impacting, you don't even know, right? So there's a bit of a disconnect in that fulfillment.
Mm. I remember even when you were away and you're working in the US, even though you loved it there was always still a draw back to Australia, right? Where you grew up.
I really wanted to move back, but again, because I hadn't come across this book at that time, the idea of not choosing growth wasn't an option to me. I just thought, oh, well, you just keep going. I guess after the US, I'd have to move somewhere else and continue to grow the career again and again and again. But really, the word refreshing comes to mind again, because this is a really refreshing approach.
Yeah, it's cool.
Let's keep jamming on what makes a small giant.
Cool. Awesome. Do you want to summarize like the sort of core areas, or do you just want to go sort of line by line on that?
Let's do it how we normally do it. Let's chat through it, see what resonates and see
this one sits outside of it just before I jump into my next thing. But the first note that I took was, it was a quote in the book that said, I've made much more money by choosing the right things to say no to than choosing the right things to say yes to.
Oh, I love that.
Right? And it does probably link to the first step, whereas the small giants generally recognize the full range of choices that they have. And yeah, I just wanted us to jam on that a little bit. Right, like, can you think of any decisions that you've made in your business journey?
Absolutely.
Where there was probably a more lucrative option there.
Yeah, definitely.
And you've actually chosen something a little bit different that was more aligned with your values.
And then in the end, made more with that.
Potentially, yeah.
Oh, dude, one comes to mind straight away.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you the same question in return after, too. Do you want me to give you my answer?
You go first. Okay.
Are you asking me?
When you said, like, I'm going to ask you the same question after, I'll assume that you're going to...
All right.
Yeah, this is our first podcast.
Yeah, so welcome to podcast episode one, everyone. Yeah, we've never
Training
done this before.
Training wheels
and icons. If you didn't call that out, they wouldn't know, Ali.
Yeah, I know.
But look, biggest rule in communication, if you don't make a big deal out of it, they won't make a big deal out of it. So he just make a big deal out of it. So that's a big deal. I'm making it a bigger deal.
I thought you were one of the best communicators in the world, but like clearly what this podcast is showing.
I am. Yeah. Because I wasn't the one who made that mistake. It was you. Okay. Now look, to answer that question. Okay. So I said no to a lot of very lucrative gigs and opportunities. So the career that I had before, what I'm doing now, most people now, if they listen to me, they know me as I teach public speaking, I teach communication skills, storytelling, all of that. Now, in my life before this, I used to be a keynote speaker. So I'd spend the majority of my time traveling all over America, Asia, the world, doing speeches. And as a keynote speaker, that industry is very lucrative. So to me, I had to start saying no to all of those gigs because I knew that doing them wasn't making me happy anymore. And I was no longer enjoying it because I was away from my family 200 days a year, right? So then I had to say no to those lucrative opportunities to say yes and create time to be able to build a new vehicle to leave that arena, right? Whereas the pressure to say yes to it was so strong because a lot of the times in this industry when sometimes you get asked to do a gig and you say, oh, no, look, no, I don't want to really do it. Sometimes they come back and they go, oh, we'll pay you more.
Yeah.
And then sometimes that greedy part of you goes, oh, they're paying that's pretty good. I'll just do one more. And there's that problem like when you eat too many damn donuts, right? So it's just one more.
Yeah.
Just one more. We'll just dunk this one in milk, just one last one.
It's like a boxer with fighting.
Yeah.
The payday's too good. I just
it's too good. Just one more. But then what that does is, it stops you from being able to say yes and create time to create a different path. Yeah. And here's the crazy part. And you know this already, right? But by me saying no to that and making time and creating space for something else, now with what I've been able to build, it has far exceeded what I would have achieved if I stayed in the world of keynote speaking as a business. And not only the financial side, but I love this path way more. Because look at what we're doing right now, Ali. Yeah. Before, we would be doing this podcast virtually because I had no damn time to do this in person with you. Yeah. But now we get to be in person. We just had a beautiful meal together. Yeah. We sat outside with Pei Wen, with Dan, with Craig. Yeah. We had lunch together. We were talking about things. Yeah. We were laughing. Yeah. Man.
It's beautiful.
That's an example right there of saying no to the current lucrative stuff.
High quality no's.
And then after that, you created a new path that was better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. And I think a lot of the times there, it's sort of trusting your own intuition and your values to guide you to the correct yes. Because especially in the business world, you often get so many opportunities that logically make a lot of sense, right? Like you'll get, and there's so many, like it really becomes one of the key roles that you play even as a leader within a business. It's filtering through 100, 200, 300 actually amazing opportunities on ideas. But after a while, you actually realize I've actually got to say no to 99% of these and just focus on the top 3 to 5. And that's one of the most difficult things. And my experience with that was I'm quite a traditional entrepreneur in a sense, where as soon as I get an inkling of an idea, I just want to give it a go.
Okay.
I get excited about it and I want to just give it a crack, put it out into market and see how it goes. You know, there's something so cool about that.
You love that speed.
I love that speed. I love the action. I love the creativity of that, you know, nearly as an art form. And then what I started realizing is that the more and more I did that, it would just mean that we would have these half-cooked ideas, like this whole like graveyard, a garage full of half-cooked ideas that I've probably just started, but there's actually no real usefulness to them. And then it was maybe 3-4 years ago where somebody was like, hey, you've really just got to understand the core of what it is that you're doing. And I was introduced to the concept of a flywheel, right, which is in Jim Collins's books. I think it was Good to Great or Built to Last, which is worth checking out.
I think it was
out. Good to Great.
Good to Great. Yeah.
And you check out this concept of a flywheel, which is really identifying like what are the 2 or 3 key areas in your business. And if you just keep focusing on that, it creates a flywheel that will just keep spinning around and getting better and better and enhancing in quality.
It spins off bigger opportunities, bigger and bigger and bigger, and gains momentum.
And that's what we realized, like even with FutureGolf, because we had thousands of ideas, right, of how to play golf more and impact more people and new markets and all of these ideas and tech and all these features and all the other bits and pieces. And somebody was like, hey, at the end of the day, fundamentally, you guys build really great relationships and then you connect those relationships and those partners with a community. Right. And the more and more that you can do that, you align everything, then it's like, okay, if you have great ideas or whatever, you just got to make sure and put them through a check that they're aligned with that idea. Right? And so that was it. And then probably just one of the biggest quality no's that I look back on now. And you never know whether the no's great or not, but that I nearly got pushed into the path, not pushed into the path, but advised into, is that when you're fast growing, especially in what's a tech type of business, you have to get the advice of, hey, if you want to keep growing at a really rapid rate, you need to get financing. You need to get investors. And pretty much every year in our journey, we've had that, you know, mentioned. And we've been bootstrapped since day one, which essentially means that you start from, nothing and then build from there. And we've been able to keep a lot of autonomy and freedom by doing that, right? So, it probably means that maybe at times we haven't grown as rapidly as we needed to. But as a team and as a culture, it's allowed us to really sort of pave that path our own way, which has been something, that I think it's been a really high quality no in terms of at least making the journey enjoyable, because a lot of other people that I spoke to at the time, they're like, if I had my time again, maybe I wouldn't have taken that capital at that point and I would have just enjoyed that journey for a little bit longer. Now, in saying that, that doesn't mean that that's a forever thing, you know, and it changes all the time, but just
in this chapter,
especially in the early parts of that chapter and the journey, that was, I think, a really cool decision that we were able to make.
And that's a common trait in small giants too. Yeah. They want to keep that autonomy in those early chapters, right? They do choose to keep that autonomy. And I think it's funny because you mentioned right at the beginning, you say that the way we run our businesses and the way we work, it impacts who we are as a person. And I have to say that I think one of the most wonderful things about you, Ali, is that it's so wonderful spending time with you, because while you're on this journey of building this amazing business, FutureGolf, you've always had this very graceful attribute where, a lot of the times if you're meeting people who are building a business like you, they're always stressed, they're always wired, they've always got a million things to do, they don't have time for you. People probably didn't even call you because they're thinking that, well, there's no point calling out, he's probably too busy.
Yeah.
Whereas every time I message you, 20 minutes later, 10 minutes later, you reply. And then every time I'm like, hey man, you want to come hang out? You're like, yeah, I'll come, we'll come hang out. It's beautiful because I think whether you did it intentionally or not, you didn't let it change who you are. And you've been able to play this game with a lot more freedom and flexibility and a lot of grace, man. It's beautiful.
Oh, thanks, brother. It means a lot. But yeah, I think for me, that was it, is I really wanted business to be a teacher more than a means to an end. You know, for me, it was, okay, well,
that's nice.
How do we keep it enjoyable and always learning? And like, to me, in terms of, I don't think there's many things out there that can teach you more than starting your own small business.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
With the uncertainty, the ups and downs, like the luck that's required, the people that you need, like all the different aspects just of how to handle that journey. And you're right, it can really, like it does test us, as much as I appreciate that compliment about it feeling, looking graceful, sometimes, yeah, it's not feeling all that graceful on the inside, right? And yeah, like you might get a reply, but then there's another 15 or so that just aren't getting a reply, yeah. Right? So there's areas there where I'm like, I'd love to say, yeah, that I'm always, just in that zone. But yeah. No, but it's not the case. And yeah, but I think you're right though. Like one of the things is, you know, it can be very cliche of saying that, hey, we're just going to focus more on the journey and not the outcome. And that is one of the challenges as a business. But yeah, I've just found that the losses and the wins don't oscillate as much when you are truly focusing on the journey a little bit more and just understanding that, hey, I'm not going to over-celebrate the wins. I'm not over-punish myself on the failures and the losses and that it is just essentially a growth journey, you know, and a journey that you share with others.
And when you look at it in that way, even the most volatile journey can be less volatile.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
Well,
I love that.
Well, I feel like you're playing with house money at that point.
Yeah.
Right? If it's more like, okay, well, this is an education. I'm not actually attached fully to the what of what we do, but I'm more attached to the way that we go about it. I don't think then you can lose because you should by the end of that journey, even if, say, that business doesn't work out or it, you know, dies down at some point or you just inevitably cop market factors, whatever it's going to be, at least you can rest easy on, well, hey, we enjoyed the hell out of this.
Yeah,
it was right? We did it with great people. Mm. We learned so much, got all these memories. We've got all these stories.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that people often forget, and including myself, is that these journeys shape us into a person. And it's not only the financial reward, but it's like the work that you currently do, it's actually currently shaping you. And is it shaping you into the person that you want to be? As opposed to, I think the way we think about work is work, I exchange my time for a paycheck. But sure, that's one of the things that work does.
One element.
But the work that you currently do with the people you do it with, these things shape you into a certain person. So at the end of it, let's say you never mind the money. Let's say for a second, who does it turn you into? Because I know some people who are running businesses or who are entrepreneurs who the businesses are turning them into a really miserable person. And they don't see that as a cost.
Yeah.
The only cost they see is the Facebook ads money that they got to pay. Yeah. But this business that you're in and the way you're navigating it, it's actually causing you to turn into someone that you actually don't want to be. But that cost is often invisible to people.
Yeah. It's interesting as you say that as well. It's like, we nearly need to focus on maintaining a relationship with what it is that we do, right? Like when we think about relationships, often we only think it's, hey, it's with another person.
With your wife.
Yeah, with our partner, with our kids, with our family, with our colleagues. But there's also an element here that, yeah, the healthier we can keep the relationships with what we do, that's also a really important area.
That's a really unique perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. So looking at my work with my business, that's a form of relationship.
That's a relationship that you have with what you do, right? Yeah.
So what are the components of the relationship between what, you know, you and what you do? Like,
I think it's always this checking in and being like, okay, well, I think first it's probably an internal check-in of, all right, how am I feeling? Right. And are the things that I'm doing, how are they aligned with me right now in the chapter of life that I'm in? Right. Especially as the work or business journey changes. It's like, okay, well, what's the quality that I'm bringing in the thinking or the ideation, or the meetings, or the interactions, or whatever it is that we're pursuing. And that's probably just one way of just doing a bit of a scan around like, okay, am I drawn to this still? Is it something that lights me up? Is this more an obligation? Is there some way that I might be able to adjust or change this? It's in like a little bit of a health check and checking in with yourself. It's like, okay, well, do I still love this aspect of it? Do I need to delegate maybe a part of this? Like I'm not really growing here anymore. And just getting a little bit introspective on, your connection with what it is that you're doing. Right? Because often it can also, it's a bit like that concept of the golden handcuffs that often happens in work, where you end up at a point 5, maybe 10 years into your career, where your company just keeps giving you trinkets, right? Like a pay rise or a bonus or an incentive scheme or equity or whatever it's going to be. But it was 4 years ago when you actually fell out of love with what it is that you're doing. But now you're just at a point where you've got the golden handcuffs. And you're like, well, this is just too good to let go of, right?
I was there with the whole keynote speak career thing. These were golden handcuffs with some diamonds on it.
It's a common thing.
Yeah.
And it's really tough. It's really tough to make a decision as well.
Yeah.
Often with a lot of entrepreneurs that worked in corporate areas, especially, the golden handcuffs play such a key role. And I've had this conversation so many times where they're like, I really want to start this idea. I love it on every single level. But every projection that I do, I can only make a quarter of what I can currently make right now in the first 12 to 18 months, even if it happens that way.
Yeah, but that's because they're undervaluing other aspects of the relationship if they did do that new thing.
That's right.
If they did do that new thing, that other relationship changes who they are.
Correct.
Brings them a sense of joy that they may not be feeling, increases their quality of life. And then because they're loving what they're doing, they go home to their kids that night. They're a better father. They're a better mother. Yeah. You know, and I think it's so easy to not see the invisible benefits that come along with doing something that's more aligned.
Or at the very least as well, you'll learn that, hey, what I was actually in, those golden handcuffs that weren't actually holding me back, it was actually really aligned. I've gone and tried a different path.
That's actually a really good point.
But I'm going to go back to it. And the other piece of advice that's linked to that thought is that if you are sitting there and you're making, it's running through your mind of should I make the leap of faith and start something on the side, or, you know, or you maybe have started something on the side, but still not at the level, is maybe just shift that perspective of this needs to do exactly what my current golden handcuff position is giving me, and go more towards, well, for the next 12 months, if I did jump ship or like try this other thing, is there a pathway there where in 12 months' time, maybe I can at least get to a level that's going to meet my base needs?
Right? Drop those expectations.
Drop the expectations a little bit. Because what you'll also find in the golden handcuff scenario, there might actually be a lot of things that you're now just spending on because you're in that position, or you may be a little bit dissatisfied. So, like, oh, I'd better upgrade the house, get that fancy car, you know, do all these things. But there might actually be things there that aren't really all that aligned or necessary that can help support that other part of the journey. If you do think that there's something, more there that you want to explore.
It's funny, when you bring up the golden handcuffs, it just makes me think of the picture. There's a picture of this horse, a massive stallion that's tied to a plastic chair. I love that picture.
That's a great
image. Love that picture. Just because it symbolizes, we trap ourselves, and sometimes we trap ourselves with, like you said, the trinkets. Sometimes we trap ourselves by thinking a certain way. So I love that. This is unexpectedly turned into a bit of an entrepreneurial promotion, you know, just promoting entrepreneurship here.
Yeah, maybe not though, because there's also complexity.
Yeah, there's a dark side to entrepreneurship.
That comes to that side too. Yeah, so, we go in with a disclaimer here.
Yeah, massive disclaimer.
Yeah,
not financial advisors.
No.
Well, I mean, as we round out the first topic that you brought up, and it's that sometimes saying no is important. It reminds me of a quote by Greg McKeown from the book we reviewed on our podcast called Essentialism. If you haven't checked that out, check out that episode. But in that one, we talk about a quote where he says, only once you give permission to stop trying to do it all, only once you give yourself permission to try to stop doing it all and stop saying yes to everyone, can you make your highest contribution towards the things that really matter?
Yeah, cool.
You know, it's again, it's like everything we're currently experiencing in this life. It sounds a little bit cheesy and woo-woo here too, but there's something that you should be doing potentially, right? And only once we start saying no to the things that are not important can we make space for the things that are.
I love that
quote.
So. Yeah, and that's also a great framework just for decision-making and prioritizing resources. Right? Like when you think about books like Essentialism or The 80-20 Principle, there's Derek Sivers's Anything You Want, right? Like these provide you with some frameworks that can help with decision-making and how you allocate resources. Right? And there is something in that where if you're able to really focus in on those most important aspects and then, you allocate quality time, energy, financial resources that you've got to it, and it aligns. It's a really good framework, and one of my favorites that we always bring up in the podcast, it's Derek Sivers' one. You know, when you're faced with the decision, I generally try not to fall into making decisions that are like 7 out of 10s or 8 out of 10s. And he's got a great saying, which is, if it's not a hell yeah, if it's not an F yeah, it's a hell no.
Yeah,
right. So you just put it in that binary category.
Yep.
Right. And it just provides some simplicity.
I'm still learning that.
Yeah.
I'm still learning that because, as we move to the next point of a small giant, the next thing that's really important to a small giant is you have to be able to say the hell knows.
Yeah.
Right. And they gave us countless examples of all these beverage companies that said no to incredible deals that would have made them multiple millions of dollars, and they chose to stay small. So it's interesting because saying no is actually one of the attributes of a small giant. Whereas I think when you're a large organization, an opportunity comes your way, because the purpose of your company is to increase value for shareholders, yeah, you kind of have to say yes. You have to say yes to all opportunities.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're a small giant, well, you don't. You don't have to say yes.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's it's a very empowering statement,
yeah,
to truly say no. Like, yeah, you could get, imagine you got like an 8 out of 10 thing that came in and there's a lot of power in being able to say, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Usually you've got an intuitive feel, right? But yeah, you're right. Sometimes, yeah. I love that. The delivering shareholder value, that sentence.
Yeah, I know. It gives me the shivers. Oof. Oh, yeah. I never want to.
Credit to
I didn't even want shareholders. I don't want any of that.
Credit to those though that manage.
Yeah,
that,
I mean, thank you for creating wonderful companies and wonderful products. That's, but that's
different game.
Right? Not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Well, you mentioned Elon Musk earlier, and even I think Steve Jobs probably similar. It's like you always saw them struggling with boards and when they were public companies because it was very in ways misaligned with the way that they operated.
I will never forget. You know, there was this period back in, I reckon, about 2014, 2015, where Jack Ma was popping up everywhere, yeah. Alibaba.
Yeah.
And then Jack Ma, I remember when someone asked him a question, they said, so Jack, tell us about your daily, like, what do you do on a daily basis being this owner of this $1 billion business? And he goes, my whole day is just meetings. Mm. I do meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. That's all I do. I just do meetings. Oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah. Unless you love meetings.
I don't think anybody really does.
I haven't seen anyone yet.
Yeah, I haven't really. Yeah, and even Jack didn't love that. And he was saying he didn't love that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think,
Yeah.
That's what kind of gives me that, you know, as I look forward. And again, I fully acknowledge this could be a self-limiting belief. Maybe there are lots of people out there who have massive businesses and are thriving, having fun and not doing meetings, you know?
Yeah. That's cool. This is just a broad one. Because I think you practice the concept of small giants really well, you know, especially in terms of people and team. You know, like I'm here in this environment, and I've had a front row seat as you've operated with your crew that are essentially your best friends and family for the most part.
I remember when I was trying to hire someone to do head of ops, and I said Ali. Ali's like, all right, so you're head of operations, Vin. What's the requirements? I said, look, I've got a really big requirement.
Yeah.
I have to love them, right? Like, I mean, love them. And then you're like, well, that reduces it down to two people.
But yeah, you've been very fortunate that a lot of the people, like we were speaking about this last night, is that you've just got so much alignment in terms of the people that are in your business, but then they've also got a seriously solid skill set, which is quite a strange thing. Like often in this scenario, you'll find the first. You'll find people that really care about you, the generalists, they can help out a little bit, but usually don't also find great skills. And so what's your thoughts on that side and how you then manage that as a small giant?
Well, I think again, and I credit to you where credit is due. When I work with someone that I really care about, one of my best friends, one of my really close family members, I always make sure to have really clear boundaries, you know, and I remember doing this with you and you gave me guidance. You're like, hey, before we work with some of the key members in your team, let's create a document. Let's set up the expectations. And anytime anything feels weird, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. And that's what I really love. And that's one of the qualities of a small giant is that intimacy. You still have intimacy in your business and in your work. Whereas, you know, when I sit here, we're in the studio right now and I can see Dan, I can see Craig there, but I know their lives rather intimately. Yeah. I know some of the things they're going through, some challenges. Yeah. I know things that make them happy. I know things that bring them joy. You know, I know when they need something, right? So it has that intimacy where everyone feels loved. Everyone feels looked after. Whereas, you know, I have done some work before in an accounting firm where I'm sitting in a cubicle and there's 140 other people in on this floor that I'm in. I don't feel any intimacy.
Yeah.
No one's talking to anyone. No one knows anything about anyone. And I just feel like I'm a cog in a machine. And I think that's why a lot of people fall out of love with their work is because it's lacking that connection and intimacy.
Yeah. I love that. I think there's two key points that really stick out with this from what I've seen that works really well. One is connection. Really deep, high-quality connection is one area that you can really win as a small giant. I think the other one is just a lot of empowerment, autonomy. And what I've found, especially like the one that I really align to in Future Golf, is just finding people that have so much potential, but the environments that they were in previously just didn't allow for that potential to fully flourish.
Yeah.
And giving them a sandbox to play in, right? Where there are some frameworks and there's structures and there's boundaries, you know, there's a strategy, there's a little bit there. But for the most part, you're nearly free to play as you want to the fullest of your ability in alignment, you know, with what it is that we're doing. And that to me is like, if you're doing that, where you've got that combination, then if you get a bit of both, where you get really good connection, chemistry, camaraderie, this genuine care that you're speaking about, plus that ability and real true opportunity for growth and impact, it's like, wow, again, that to me is like, that's the special sauce that I'm always searching for in team.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yep.
I think giving them that freedom to flourish and grow and that space to grow.
Can't remember what book it was in as well. And just from a hiring perspective, the book said that when they hired, they were looking for two things. One is, would you be happy for your kid to work with or for that person that you're about to hire? Right?
Wow, that's a really cool test.
That's a pretty cool test, right?
Damn.
So that's a real one around like, yeah, like around trust, culture, character, integrity, all of those other areas. And then the other one was, would you be happy to bump into that person at 2 a.m. on a Sunday morning?
That's a random one,
right?
Yeah, okay.
So again, like, it's like, okay, well, if you saw that person out, like, would you be happy, you know, to sort of spend time with them or see them, or would you be scared, you know, of how they're going to be behaving or whatever it's going to be?
So I'd be scared if I ran into certain people at 2 a.m. on a Sunday.
That you work with?
What are you doing at 2 a.m. on a Sunday? What am I doing?
Running into Craig at 2 a.m. on a Sunday.
Running into Craig anytime is scary.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, but it's like that you can nearly have these frameworks as you're building those seeds. And I think that's, you've obviously got one where it's like you nearly have to be related to the person. So that's fine. So that's nice and
I'm
clear.
Running out of people anyway. Yeah, I know. I can't hire anybody else.
It's great in terms of small giants, right? You're gonna cap out there really soon. But yeah, that's cool.
Well, one of the words you said there before that I really wanted to chat on for a second is camaraderie.
Yeah.
I love that. You know, the one place that I think traditionally people get camaraderie would be during a war.
Yeah, sport.
Yeah, war. I go to war straight because I love war movies. But like, it's like when I watch Band of Brothers, a movie, like that's just classic series. The bonds that are formed in that series is just so beautiful. Yeah. It's people who are willing to die for each other. Yeah. People who have each other's backs. People who make sacrifices for each other.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, entrepreneurship is kind of the modern day battle in a sense, because we get to go to battle together. And when we're going to battle together and we are that connected and we go through challenges together, then that does develop that camaraderie.
Yeah.
And that camaraderie, I think, is just
so important.
It's so fulfilling knowing that you've got, you know, your brothers and sisters here on the front line with you. And no matter what happens, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
That gives you something in life that I think, there's, like you said, maybe sport. I don't know much about sport.
Yeah.
But let's say like sport. I'm sure you get it there too.
Sport. But, I think working in healthcare, hospitals. Right. I think working in education, teaching.
Mm.
You know, working in emergency services.
Definitely.
There's probably heaps of areas actually. Like when you actually break it down.
Anywhere
where there's like collaboration and a lot of teamwork required.
Mm.
You know, even restaurants. Like if you think about hospitality and you see those movies, like they're a real team and a unit.
Really?
Yeah, and they're fighting the shift. So yeah.
And I worked in a takeaway store before. I felt zero camaraderie.
Yeah.
Zero camaraderie.
That was with your parents though,
right?
Yeah,
it was my parents. That's
real camaraderie there. That's different. I think that's a little bit different. But I think that's a really cool point is if you're looking for that in your workplace, put yourself in positions where there's either cultures or vocations that allow for camaraderie to naturally happen.
I really value that.
That's cool.
I really value that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people value connection. And like, and you hear that a lot. It's like, what was your favorite workplace that you worked in? And usually it's not based on the actual company or what it is that they were doing. It's usually based on the people that they were working with.
Yeah.
Or what, it, you know, the impact that they were working on.
I still remember when I was younger and I was dating previous partners before I met my wife. I remember when we would come home at night together, the main thing they would talk about is they'd be bickering about the people they were working with.
Yeah.
Like so they'd come home, you'd be like, oh my God, I gotta tell you what Susan said to me today. Susan said, and it's honestly, sure, I understand that sometimes people need a vent.
Yeah.
But if you're doing that every single week, every single weekday, it got to a point where I'm like, while she was talking, I was like, this is genuinely a waste of time.
Yeah.
Because you're saying the same thing to me every single week.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is what happens when you're working in an organization that doesn't really value that intimacy, mm-hmm. doesn't value the connection. And maybe they do value it, but you grow to a certain point where it's almost impossible to maintain that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And just sort of sticking on the theme of like team members and people as well. There's a really good point in the book, and one of the challenges when you're a small giant, especially if you're working with a lot of people that you deeply care about.
Yeah, yeah.
Is how do you find that balance of, they use the terms being merciful versus being demanding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this one's super tricky.
This is
hard. I wanted to get your viewpoint on that.
All right. So do you mean if there's something that we need them to do, but that requires them to go above and beyond the call of duty?
Yeah, well, the book used a couple of different examples.
Okay.
And just even going broader beyond the book, but it's really thing around like, okay, well, how do you find that balance of being someone's like leader or manager and boss versus also holding them accountable, right?
Yeah.
Or like there was an example used in the book as well where like I think there was one of the companies mentioned where they really wanted to keep their teams together, right? And then often they would get into a process where they would get somebody that was just really underperforming for a long period of time, but they really love that person.
Right.
So then they had to deal with the balance of, well, do we still keep going down that path just because we really care about them versus how do we actually balance that with the expectations and the performance of the organization of the team?
All right. Well, these are thoughts. These are by no means solidified.
This is one of the hardest. I don't think not many people have figured this out in business,
So
right?
It's always jam with this one. This one's good.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I look at everyone's performance as a continuum.
Yeah.
I don't believe anything ever exists as a just like a straight curve, right? Sure. I think everyone exists on a continuum, even myself, right? There are days I walk in and I can do 3 hours and I can do 10 hours of work within 3 hours. There are some days I go in, I do 10 hours and I've done 1 hour of work and sometimes 0 hours of work, right? So first of all, I extend that empathy to everyone that I work with. First of all, I appreciate and understand there's a continuum that exists.
Okay? Yeah, that's cool.
And
I like that.
And first of all, there's some days they'll come in, they'll be better than others. Some days they come in, they won't be as good. Mm-hmm. But then I also look for the through line, because of the continuum. if it's just low performance for 3 years, well, that's not a continuum anymore. Because a continuum kind of speaks to there are ups and there are downs, right? Whereas that's just down.
It is a continuum. It's just a really low continuum.
But I always look for that through line of going.
Yeah.
But over the last year or so, what's been the trajectory? And as long as to me the trajectory is in a positive manner, that's okay, because there's a human element to this.
Yeah.
And this is not me trying to be the boss of the year, but this is just appreciating that like people go through shit times in life and people have problems that occur. And if you look at the overall picture, if things are kind of going in the right direction, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And just that thought there as well, I think often, especially for the leaders, when they're, and say you're working for somebody that's maybe being a little bit judgmental or they feel like they're being a little bit harsh.
Right, right.
I think a lot of the time that's driven by fear, right?
Fear of what?
Like the fear and uncertainty of that leader, not knowing how things are playing out. And sometimes they then reflect that on their team members. Because I love what you're saying there. It's like really easy. Say if targets aren't met or KPIs aren't met.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, all right, who are we?
Who's on the chopping board?
Yeah, who here's at the bottom of their continuum right now, right? Because it's like, it can be a really easy thing, right?
Yeah.
And you're right. Like a lot of the times there's an element of patience that's required and you do need to judge it over a longer period of time too.
I think so.
Yeah. It's a really, really interesting area, this.
Yeah.
And how they do that. Now, I think one of the, what I found as well, it probably goes back to what we discussed a little bit earlier there. It's around having clear, like really clear baseline expectations and just making sure that they're met. And then also aligning to values is usually really important as well. Because sometimes you can get a really high performer that just doesn't align with the values. And that can be great in the short term, but it might be really damaging longer term, right? You see this a lot in sports teams where they'll get the star player, but then culturally, they're just killing the team.
Really?
Right? Yeah, like they'll perform and do their little bit,
But they don't involve anybody
but
else.
But they're not actually helping the team win a championship.
Right, because they're not a part of
it. It's more about their own glory, own needs. Am I a star? Have I got all my endorsements? And it happens a fair bit.
Mm.
Right? And this was actually one of the big shifts if you watched Michael Jordan's documentary.
Oh, I love that documentary. Right?
Like at the start, he was such an individual player. Like he was always clearly the best in the league when he played.
Yeah.
That wasn't an issue. But it's like when Phil Jackson, his coach, came in, it was like, hey, we actually need you to now start to pass the ball. Right? Like you're going to get your 35, 40, you could score 45 points every single game.
Yeah.
But the reality is if they only score another 20, we're still going to be losing most of the time, right? Or we're going to get knocked out in the finals or when the pressure's really on.
Mm.
Can you bring that level of performance every week? And Michael Jordan's probably the only person that could have honestly answered, yes, I can and I will. But he also then realized the importance that if he really wanted to win championships, which was his ultimate goal, it would have to be, you know, playing in a system and playing in a team a little bit more and trusting teammates more and bringing the best out in them.
Mm.
And that's a pretty cool sign of leadership, I think, especially if you're a star player.
Yeah, yeah. And those exist in business too.
Yeah.
You know, there are star players in business too.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I wanted to touch on that too is one of the other requirements, well, not requirements, but it was almost one of the telltale signs that you're a small giant too is you've got to have a sound business in terms of the margins that you have to be
glad you've touched
really
on this.
Good, right?
Yeah.
Because if you don't have good margins, well, you'll be like, well, screw the continuum, dude. There's no margin for us to be empathetic with the continuum. So I think you've got to be experienced enough as an entrepreneur or understand the game that you're playing enough to have big enough margins so you're not making decisions with your people out of stress.
Yeah.
I used to be there. I used to live there. Same. Where and dude, I'll call myself out right now. Right at the start of COVID, I freaked out. I freaked out. I've never experienced anything like COVID before. So I freaked out and I didn't think about my team members. I just thought, man, I need to go into self-preservation mode because I got so afraid. I thought this is the end of the world. I've never seen the world shut down like this. I've never seen businesses all around me just shut down like this. So it's one of those things where, look, in order to maintain that mindset and be a good leader, I think that generally only happens from a place of abundance.
Yeah.
Whereas if there's scarcity, it's actually really hard to remain that leader. Well, and props to the people who can, but I'm just kind of calling myself out on my own limitations.
Yeah,
I can do that when things are abundant. And but I
you can be
really
a lot more patient
myself.
On the continuum.
Oh,
the
you can be a lot more patient
when you've got a very healthy business model.
Yeah, that's right.
It gives you more flexibility.
Well, it allows you to be more human. Yeah. It allows you to be more human.
And it's true. Like I've been in the same position as well. Like if I think back to even the Future Golf journey over 10 years, the times, like even when I look back on it, where like the actual work and the people and who are involved, like it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was probably even when I think back on it, you know, in chapters of the journey, it was nearly some of our highest quality work.
Wow.
But we didn't have the model absolutely locked away, right?
Didn't have the margins.
We didn't have the, and we're winning like business awards at the time and that. We couldn't even afford tickets to go to the awards, right?
Because
that's how bad.
That's hilarious.
It was like this weirdest little
period. You should have told me, man. I wouldn't let you some money.
This is like the weirdest thing. And it's like, yeah, we got like at the same time, I think our Facebook account got hacked and, you know, like all these things are happening. And it's like, okay, well, you know, but when I actually think back to the game that we were playing like championship level games in hindsight, but just the timing and, you know, like a lot of the moves that we'd sort of invested in just hadn't flourished yet.
Yeah.
So you couldn't taste all that. But yeah, it makes it really challenging. And then, yeah, it can be tough on the team and the people as well.
So again, just speaking to that is that to be a small giant, I think one of the benefits of small giant is that, well, I mean, I'm not saying all small giants are like this, but yeah, just good margins. Really important.
Yeah. We talk about when we really talk about business models, what we mean is the way that you exchange value with customers, right? At a decent margin that allows you to operate your business.
Yeah.
And the example that's used in the book, they use like a couple of video effects businesses in California.
That did the graphics for a lot of famous movies.
Yeah, but they had a really flawed model in that sense where based on how the industry worked, they would sort of get a fixed fee, but then often
have to overwork.
The requirements of the movies would change, and then they'd actually end up losing money on jobs, sometimes a film would get cancelled, and they had to wear all the costs. So it could be like a $20 to $40 million turnaround for these types of businesses. Mm. But then they were winning Academy Awards, and they're getting celebrated for the amazing work that they're doing, but they're essentially at bankruptcy at that point.
Yeah.
Right. So it's really sometimes you might even get it right. You'll get the right people. You'll be doing something amazing. You'll be doing something incredible. but actually turning that into a business model that operates is a really core part of that. So get that advice if you need it.
Yeah.
And that's where like business advisors and, you know, others that have maybe got profitable businesses can help you a little bit with some ideas around just how to manage cash flow, how to manage your finances and how to create a model of, you know, that's going to optimize the way that you exchange value. Right. And it's not about losing the soul of the business or anything, but this is the way that I always looked about it on our journey. It's like, hey, we can have so much fun here, but we need to have a sustainable business model that facilitates that.
Yeah.
Right. If we can't tick that box, the fun actually comes after that.
Mm.
Right. It's not like the fun comes first and then we figure out the model. It's like you got to figure out the model.
It's true.
Yeah. Before we have fun. Yeah.
And hey, like I can tell you right now, even within my own business, right? I've been running my business now for probably the last, like I've been on the entrepreneurial journey since I was bloody 18, man. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm turning 37 in a couple of weeks, right?
Good.
So I've been on this journey a long time.
Yeah.
And I can tell you only in the last 12 months have I been able to schedule 3 days a month where my team and I have fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, we have fun other days too, but no, these are 3 full days of fun where I fly the whole team in and we create content. And I said to the team that one of the goals in these 3 days is the content that we create has to be birthed out of fun. Oh. But it's taken that long in my life to get the business model right, to make sure there's enough of a margin to be able to soak, you know, 4 or 5 people enjoying themselves creating content. Mm. Right? It's been a long journey, man. Yeah.
Even just this conversation, when I reflect on sort of this year for me personally, is it's just making me realize to infuse more of that fun and playfulness back into it.
Yeah.
Right. Because sometimes it can get too serious.
It does.
And it, you know, it's like, oh, like, and we're in a process now where we're trying to put in some structures and frameworks and all these serious businessy terms,
words,
right? Yeah. And like, they don't really align with fun. You know, like,
really?
Like it, but it's great for the, it's again, it's great fundamentals.
It enables fun.
It enables fun, right? But then it's like, at some point, you then also have to remember, it's like, hey, all right, like you don't want to lean one way. Yeah, like if you're just only focusing on fun,
there's
you probably
have
a good chance. If you've been able to figure that out, like fully amazing,
how
like
many,
that's the most epic situation.
How many people who have just fun in their business are in jail right now?
Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street's probably there.
He's out, man.
He's not in jail, but like that was an example of like just a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Getting a little bit weird.
Yeah. You know, so, there's many different types of fun.
You
define it however you want.
Yeah. Maybe that wasn't fun. Who knows? But
I think it was watching the movie. It seemed like you had a lot of fun. Well, I mean, another one as well is I think being a small giant is you as a business saying, hey, I'm actually content.
Hmm.
I'm feeling rather content as a business.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to 10x, you know. It's, and honestly, again, I've unfollowed a lot of people on social media because just so often, man, it's just the, you know, why 2x your business when you can 10x your business? And then another person will come in and goes, why 10x when you can 1,000 million x? And I'm just like, man, I don't want to do that. Like, just the thought of 1,000 million xing just makes me feel really tired.
Jeez, yeah, that's it.
I feel exhausted saying it.
1,000 million xing.
1,000 million xing.
I love that.
I mean,
that's a lot of xing.
That's a lot of xing. Yeah, I don't want to do that. Good. Do you want 1,000 million x?
No, I don't think so. Not the way, but not when you put it like that.
Right. So I think.
No, I'm imagining it coming from some like social media video as well.
I should start creating those, creating ads, and setting a course on how to 1,000 million x.
Yeah. Awesome.
No, but what I'm saying there is, I think it's a path of contentment. Saying that, hey, I'm kind of content where this is at, and I want to put the focus on a lot of my team members, right? Because that's another quality of a small giant, right? You read through the book multiple examples of where, you know, the owners knew the receptionist. The owners knew the person that was cleaning up the studios.
Yeah.
And I like that human element.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to focus on 1,000 million xing to the point where it changes me and that I don't focus on that now. And now what I'm focusing on is the 1,000 million exit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not really...
Yeah.
That kind of takes all the joy out of it for me. It takes the human element out of it for me.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, when I go back to it, still the main motivation is when I look at the chapter that we're in right now, it's bringing more people into the ecosystem and like, quotation marks, the world that we've built and allowing them to flourish within it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I'm a little bit different in your sense. Like I like sort of nearly sometimes getting things happening and then watching from afar. It's more like a movie unfolding and a game sort of playing out. You know,
you've done a lot of that with me.
Yeah, like it's a different approach, right? Mm. Where I think some are very hands-on.
Yeah.
They really want to get, you know, really intimate with every team member and every player.
Yeah.
Whereas, I like sort of rove around a little bit.
Yeah, you're like that shit friend.
Yeah, that's my tagline, like even in friendship groups. Yeah. Not there every day, but when I'm there, it's all right.
No, it's true, it's true. Yeah. He's not there every day. He's not that reliable.
Nah.
But damn, when he's there, he's there. You know what I mean?
That's sort of more my angle.
I love that.
I'm not the call every day type of guy. No.
I'll
be there at funerals, though.
I'll be there at funerals too, mate. Yeah. But it's the, I mean, one thing, I'm sure I've said this before on the podcast, but I think it's worth saying again. It's like, you know, you aren't there on the everyday basis, but man, when COVID came and my business disappeared overnight on March 15th, 2020, you know, on March 16th, you were on a call with me where in Melbourne, it was 1 a.m. I was freaking out and we're online. I was on Canva going, how am I going to structure these deals moving forward when I can't go do keynotes anymore? And then you and I were just battling it out, you know? And so, dude, you're when it matters, you rock up.
We're there, my friend. We're there.
But
No, it's cool.
Yeah, I don't need you to be there while I'm making a sandwich.
No.
Yeah, not really relevant.
I won't add much there.
No, you probably wouldn't even make it taste.
Probably only wreck
you'll
the
probably
sandwich.
Eat my sandwich.
I'll probably eat the sandwich.
You'll probably eat my sandwich.
Yeah. I'll like accidentally slip over, like push you over, the sandwich will fall on the ground. Yeah.
No. Oh, that's hilarious. Well, look, I mean, there are other components too with being a small giant. And this one, it was written in the book, but it wasn't kind of highlighted. But another component of small giant is that I still love doing the thing.
Mm.
Whereas a lot of the times when you grow your business, you now step out of your business and you're no longer doing the thing.
Mm.
Whereas I love the thing.
Explain the thing.
Yeah. Well, the thing for me is I love creating. I love teaching. I love being a part of the strategy, like the strategy in the business. I love all of it. I love doing the thing. So to me, I don't want to grow to a point where the thing that I'm doing that I really love is no longer the thing that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I think that is the unfortunate nature of growth. Is that gradually you get to the point where you may not be doing the thing you enjoy anymore. You may be, and this is a classic one you hear from entrepreneurs where they say something like, oh man, I'm not getting to do what I love anymore. You know what I'm doing now? I'm just HR, bro.
Yeah.
I'm just HR, man. I'm just finance.
Just legal.
Exactly. That's all that I'm doing now. And I just think that's so unfortunate because often entrepreneurs start the thing they're doing is because they love the thing.
That's right.
But when you grow to a certain point, you no longer do the thing.
Yeah, it's a really important reminder. Even I've noticed it too. When I think about the origins of our DNA, it started with a genuine love for golf and playing golf and doing that. And there's been just a couple of times over the 10-year journey where I can actually see when I'm not playing golf and I'm not actually engaging with that, it does change my relationship with the business as well.
Right.
Like they're actually quite intertwined. Like my love for the game also energizes
your love for the business.
Yeah, the love
really?
For the business.
Really? There's a correlation
there for
you.
It's really correlated, right? And the pandemic was a really interesting time because that was probably one where I was heading into it. And I'd nearly not fallen out of love with the game, but I just wasn't playing that much.
Mm-hmm. And then couldn't.
Well, no, this was before the pandemic.
Right.
But then funnily enough, when the pandemic took that away from us and it's like we couldn't then play, all of a sudden I'm like FOMO, you know, fear of missing out kicks in. I'm like, I love golf. Like, I need to play golf, right? I completely rekindled my love. with the game. I'm like, what? You got to take it away. Where's my golf? It's like, And I think sometimes we just need these reminders along the journey as well. Like I love what you just said there about nearly reminding yourself what the thing is. And are you even doing the thing? And
are you doing the thing anymore? The thing that lights you up? The thing that you started this whole damn thing for? You know, it's such an important component.
It's an important reminder. And sometimes that changes as well. Your relationship with the changes. Sure, and you've got to always kind of recalibrate that a little bit in terms of, okay, well, I'm now 5 years in or I'm 3 years in or I'm 10 years in. And this applies even to work or anything that you're doing. It's not just being a business owner. But it's like, oh, okay, well, we spoke about it earlier. Like, what's my relationship with this right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. And is it strong? Yeah. It's cool.
Mm. Any other ones that you wanna bring up? I mean, I've still got a few, but I thought I'd throw it over to you for a sec. I mean, I've been hogging this one for one moment.
No, I'm liking it. Here's one that I wrote down. It's a note. How to not go crazy as an entrepreneur.
Enlighten us, Ali. How to not go crazy as an entrepreneur. Enlighten us.
Yeah, I don't know why I wrote this down, but something obviously stuck out when I was reading through the book. And the note that I had there is, for me, I nearly use the entrepreneurship journey nearly as like a spiritual practice in a way, right? Okay. Like I'm always really interested in like, okay, well, and not in like a rah-rah spiritual way, but it's like, okay, well, what is this game of entrepreneurship teaching me about life, right? Like how's it impacting my state of mind? How's it impacting the way that I connect with the world and other people? How's it impacting simple things like my breathing? Right? Like, am I in a nice space right now? And like, even my team members, I laugh sometimes. Like, sometimes it's randomly in a meeting. I'll just be like, hey, guys, like, today we're just going to take a few breaths, you know, and we're just going to start like in that.
I've actually started incorporating that. Did you notice that today? I led us with that.
Yeah, you did it.
You really changed my life with that.
Like, it's huge. And it's just these other things. And sometimes, and what I found with that, and why I say like, I use the word spiritual loosely there, but I feel that when we're in the work mode or we're in the entrepreneurship mode, we're really largely in our minds. We live in our heads and we lose that groundedness sometimes, right? Or that connection with like, you know, our spirit or our heart or those sort of areas of our life. Because you get so logical and tactical and it's all about the game or it's like, I've got to juggle all these balls right now. But there's always so much, so much happening at any given time, right? And yeah, it was just interesting that thing. It's like, how do you not lose it, you know, as an entrepreneur? Because as you said, it's a continuum. And like us, we're 10, 20 years into this journey. It's like maintaining nearly your own sort of state and health and, you know, the way that you learn from it. But yeah, there was just something in there, you know, and the other side to that is I wrote a note around, well, sometimes you nearly have to have a healthy, like we're always obviously really attached to our businesses and our jobs and what we do, but you nearly need to take a step back sometimes, I find, and just detach from it too for a little period. Right. You know, untether so that you can see it for what it is. Not with the biased views of just being so connected, you know, and what it means to you and how hard you've worked on it. You always hear these words with entrepreneurs. It's like, I've put in so much into this. I can't let it go right now. I can't do that.
It sounds like me.
And maybe, but I think it's a lot of people. Yeah. I don't think it's just you. Like, it's all of us that are in that because you invest so much of yourself into it.
Yeah.
You know, like in so many areas and you sacrifice so much. So, yeah, for me, I like, even at random times, I'll just try to untether myself just to rebuild that. Again, healthy acceptance of what's going on and to even view the business nearly as an observer.
How do you untether?
I usually get away for a bit. Mm. I change environments, right? Like once or twice a year.
So just to give context to all our listeners as well, Ali's just recently been to Norway to do a retreat with Eckhart Tolle. So that's what's probably influenced the last 10 minutes of his spiel there, where he, you know, it sounded very zen and very, you know, you should have seen the moment when he came back from this retreat. And I still want to ask you, how do you not go crazy as an entrepreneur? Because I feel like you haven't fully explained it.
Yeah, I have gone crazy as an entrepreneur. Yeah, so like, this is the I just realized as we're talking about spirituality. And detaching from it.
Let me tell the story. This guy goes to Norway, right? He travels by himself like a loner.
Yeah.
And he's on this. I still don't understand self-travel. Maybe I'm the loser here. But then he's on this trip and he sends me pictures of himself sitting by himself in restaurants eating. And he goes, best night of my life. All right. I was like, man, that's the saddest thing I've ever seen, right? And then in the foreground, in the background of the photos are couples laughing, enjoying themselves. And in front of him is a dish and an empty chair, right? It just looks so sad. And then when he comes home, he's all excited. He's speaking all slow because it's all zenned out. And then he goes, hey Vin, before we begin this call, let's just take a few breaths together. And I'm like, you're not Eckhart Tolle, okay? I'm like, who do you think you are? And then seriously, right? I was so skeptical of this because you got to understand, I'm usually pretty wired, okay? So I'm usually pretty intense in my work. And he comes back. He forgets that I didn't do the retreat. It tells me to take a few breaths. And I remember because I was all wired and greasy. You're right, as I usually am by 5 p.m.
You look like a guy that hasn't breathed. Like you haven't taken a breath in like 4 months.
And you're like, hey, just take five breaths. Yeah. And I was like, done. Okay, that didn't make me feel better. Actually, I feel more freaked out right now.
We just wasted five breaths on this rubbish.
Hey, but I just want to say credit due where it's deserved, etc. Because today, before we started, so many of the things we were doing.
Yeah,
I was saying to you, I was like, hey, Ali, before we jump into this next video we're filming. Mm. Let's just take five breaths.
I'm like, I'm already breathing, bro.
Fine. I know. You're already doing it. But it was more for me.
It was so cool. Like, it was great.
So cool, man, because that's your influence influencing me. Mm. And I have to tell you all, you know, even that you're listening to this and you were skeptical like me. Now, when I go through my day, I feel like the day gets to move a little slower. I feel a little more peace just because between activities, because I've got time blocks. That's how I work through my day. So I've got like a 3-hour time block in the morning, then a 2-hour, then a 1-hour, then a 3-hour, etc. Between time blocks, I'm just taking 5 to 10 breaths. Yeah. Nothing even extravagant. But that just allows me to reset, to start this new activity with a sense of calm. Whereas I used to just be, if you think about RPMs on a car, and let's say 9,000 is max RPM. I'm 8,500 RPMs when I walk in, and I'm 8,500 RPMs when I walk out. Really? And this engine is on the brink of destruction, man.
Well, we were laughing last night and we used the analogy of like, you're already going downhill really fast, but you're still fully flooring the accelerator while you're going downhill. And it's like, there's no need. You can't go any faster. Hey man,
that's how you create grease on your face. that's how you get
sweaty and greasy.
That's how you get greasy.
Yeah.
But I really love that now because I see the impact of that. So look, let's touch back on how. First of all, I want to know, how do you not go crazy? Come on, let's make this real pragmatic.
Well, and just on that point as well.
Yeah.
It's funny enough, you mentioned Eckhart Tolle, right? And in the retreat, one of the questions that he got asked was from somebody that was working, I think, in Hollywood as a really busy film producer or film executive.
One of the participants.
One of the participants. Right, asked him and they're like, hey, like Eckhart, like, I love this. Like right now I'm at the retreat and I'm so relaxed and this is great. But then in 2 days' time, I'm going to go back into my real life and it's going to be absolutely chaotic. And I like every day I have a list of 100 things, 120 things. Mm. Like how do I manage that? Like how do I still maintain this level of like stillness or calmness that I've got from this retreat?
Right.
But then still operate in a job that I absolutely love. So the question was nearly like, all right, like it nearly feels binary sometimes. It's like, hey, you can only be like sitting there meditating, you know, with your eyes closed or whatever, but then you can't really be actively participating in the world. And Eckhart had a really cool response. He's like, well, you still do the 100 things on your list, but just bring more attention to it, right? So as you're doing the thing, don't be worrying about what's on the next item or on item number 43.
Right.
Do one, bring attention to it, be aware, breathe, and then at the end of the task, once you've ticked it off, like take a moment, tick it off, smile, Take a breath. Or just one breath.
Just one breath.
Take one breath.
You didn't tell me about the one breath option. you told me to take five.
Do one.
Wasting my time.
Do half if you want. But it's like, take one breath.
Yeah.
And then go to number two. And he's like-
Do you know what that does? Can I just quickly butt in here? This is what I do.
Yeah.
Okay? Which is wrong. So I'm doing task one. I'm trying to be vulnerable here, bro. Stop laughing. So what I do is right. So I'm doing the task number one.
Yeah.
And while I'm doing task number one, I'm worrying about the other 74 tasks that I have to do next. So it's robbing me of so much cognitive energy because while I'm doing this one, I'm like I'm doing the one thing, but it's good. Like I'm doing a good job, man. Come on. Yeah, I'm a high performer.
Right? Yeah, there's no doubt.
But this high performance is crippled because while I'm doing this thing that I'm really good at, in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, yeah, but while you're doing this, just don't forget, you got to do that second thing too. But don't forget, that second thing is linked to the 17th thing, that if you don't do the 17th thing, that means you're going to delay everyone on the 24th thing. And my mind is, right, and I'm still able to go through that. So that was a, how come you didn't tell me this story when you came back?
Saving it for the podcast.
Really? Were you?
I thought I did tell you.
You did not tell me about the Hollywood guy. You did not tell me that.
There you go. I forgot.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm glad we do this podcast.
Yeah, we go.
That's good.
Yeah.
But that's but beautiful though. But can you see? Can you see what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
Is that I was doing that one task while carrying the burden of the other 74. Whereas now I still have the burden, but just do one at a time.
Yep.
And just leave the others by the side. That's bloody insightful.
And it's a practice, right? Like I know this and it's still not that easy to practice.
Because
you just end up going into an autopilot mode.
Yeah.
Right? Like sometimes that's the hardest thing. Like even then before when you were talking, we were talking about breathing, right? But there's something even so powerful of somebody else telling you to take a breath.
There is.
You know, when you tell yourself to take a breath, you're like, you know, like it's like,
that's not even a breath.
That's really weird.
What was
like,
that?
I'm like, we'll do some breathing classes after this because that's not really, you're eating spaghetti at that point. I think
you're
that's
slurping air.
That's all right. That's cool. Like, hey,
learning.
But yeah, like even just when you said it's like, the power of you telling me to take that breath. And funnily enough, like even my team, they think I'm nuts as well because like I'll go into meetings. And when I came back from that retreat, I'm like, hey, you know, like our big focus for the next quarter is going to be about connection and consciousness and the quality of consciousness that we bring into what we do and stuff. And they're like, they're like, yeah, we haven't been, you know, in Norway doing all these things. We've just been working and like being normal human beings while we're like going about our business, right?
Oh, gosh.
But there is a power in that though, I think, especially in terms of empowering those around you. Yeah. just like, because to me, it's not about spirituality or about, you know, following some doctrine or some framework here. It's actually about just bringing more quality, awareness, consciousness to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. And to me, that's just a more enjoyable way to go about it. You know, and you don't feel like it. You still can feel stressed, right?
Yeah,
but you don't feel as exhausted, and you don't feel that wired, and you don't feel like, you know.
Well, list of things to do is going to be there anyway.
It's going
to
be there anyway. The list exists, right?
Dude, you just made me feel like I'm. This one's something just hit. Something just hit home.
I'm still imagining you breathing like.
Yeah, I'm trying to have
some. Yeah, sorry, I know.
Yeah, I'm trying. No, seriously. Like,
yeah, go.
One thing that just really hit hard there is, I think that list that I carry of the 74 things, I think it also impacts me when I'm spending time with Paywen and Xander, and my wife and my son. I think when I'm with them, sometimes that list is still on my head. You know, so I think I need to find some form of practice where I think we spoke about this about two podcasts ago, where I'm going to go back to it because I've dropped off on it, is that before I go into the house, before I go into the apartment, while I'm sitting in the car, before I go in, I'm just going to sit there and I'm just going to consciously say to myself, let's leave the list of things to do here in the car.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to this tomorrow when we sit back in the car and drive to work. We'll pick it back up from here. But I'm leaving this list here so that I can go in and just be in the moment.
Yeah.
And remember that list is still going to be there tomorrow. It'll
still be there.
I don't know why, but in this particular moment when you were saying it, it hit me very different.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And yeah,
so thank you, man.
Yeah,
that was...
These are things to play around with.
Yeah, things to play around with. And we're just aware as well that, like, again, just trust me. When Nali came back and said all this to me, I did think he was batshit crazy.
Yeah.
I just went, he's a little bit crazy now. He's losing his mind. He's become one of those things.
He's now an 80-year-old guy. Yeah. That's like,
I mean, the funniest thing that Ali told me about Eckhart Tolle, and I have to tell you this story. Is he goes, this guy, because I'm a keynote speaker, right? So I'm
like, hey, Ben, I've got a new favorite keynote speaker.
I know, I was a little bit upset. But then I've just never, I'm all about capturing the audience's attention within the first split second, building rapport, making them laugh, bringing magic, bringing humor, bringing wisdom, infusing it all. Yeah. One impact moment per minute, right? So this guy tells me, this is what Eckhart Tolle does, right? Which I'm like, what the frick? So Eckhart Tolle. He walks really slowly out on stage. Yeah. And this guy, and he doesn't even stand, right? So this guy walks out and then he sits down, and then he just breathes and he starts breathing for 5 minutes. He says nothing.
Yeah,
like, and then the audience is just waiting on every single word. They're like, what's he going to say? And then what does he say?
Yeah, he's like, every now and again, he'll be like, you're like, he's just waited for 3 minutes or whatever. He's like, I'm just waiting for the talk to start.
And it's like, just gets everyone laughing. I'm waiting for the talk to start. But you're the bloody speaker. So just begin the keynote. What the frick?
Well, he doesn't prepare anything. He just freestyles with whatever comes up.
The part of me that's a performer, the part of me that loves to rehearse, that gives me so much anxiety. Oh, it just gives me the heebie-jeebies.
And it's such an interesting, like...
Oh, what an amazing human.
I learned so much about different forms of, like, connection and communication as well. Because, funnily enough, you know the environment you create when you perform live?
There's a lot of
connection. There's a lot of energy there,
right?
Really interestingly, he did a very similar thing, but from the opposite side, nearly without any really active energy. Right, he did it by holding just a very still space for everyone in there. And everyone just automatically, you nearly get more relaxed just hearing him talk. Right, like if you've heard his audiobook.
I have.
Most of the reviews like, really, either I didn't really get what he was talking about or it put me to sleep. This has become an Eckhart Tolle episode now. But it's like, he's just got that thing. It's like, yeah, if you're struggling with sleep, just listen to Eckhart Tolle's audiobook at one times the speed and it'll probably help a little bit. But yeah, it's amazing. But anyway,
different style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
does he have a podcast?
So how do we not go crazy?
Does he have a podcast? Wait, does he have a podcast?
I don't know.
Can you imagine his podcast?
Yeah.
It's just silence.
Yeah.
It's just all right. Yeah. So how do you not go crazy as an entrepreneur? So look, taking breaths. Taking the day, being more attentive in each thing that you do.
Yeah.
Don't carry the weight of all the other things while you're doing the thing. Mm-hmm. Just do the thing. Then move to the next thing and just focus on that thing. And I love that.
And my second one was just try not to get too attached.
Yeah, yeah.
Try right. not to get too attached to what it
and
is.
And again, my question to you is how? How do you not get too attached?
Yeah, you purposefully detach yourself from it at times. You take a little break.
Right.
You remove yourself. You do an off-site retreat with your team.
Okay.
You have that balcony view of your business a little bit more rather than just being in the weeds and in it at every single moment.
Right. Yep. Okay. Yep. Tell you what I'm never going to detach from.
Cool.
What? Coffee.
Ooh,
okay. Never going to detach from that. Yeah. I can't.
It's a big call. Like, what if you just one day decide you don't want to drink coffee?
Why would I decide that? I wouldn't.
No,
oh, that was silly.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know why you said that. That's weird.
I don't know why you said that.
Because I know I'm never going to detach myself from coffee.
No, I feel like it's a challenge.
Yeah, no.
It's like you're nearly challenging. Dude, I feel like you're challenging me to detach you from coffee. Like, I felt that as a full-on attack, even though I like coffee.
That was the way in which I said it. I said it in a very challenging way. Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I like coffee too, and now I feel like quitting coffee because of the way you just said that.
What dare you then?
Just ruin coffee for everyone.
I mean, I just remember the other day. We were in Malaysia. We just did a trip to Malaysia as a family, and there wasn't a coffee machine.
Yeah.
And I just remember that one day there wasn't a coffee machine. Dude, my head hurt.
Yeah.
I'm very reliant.
So, do you like making your own coffee, or would you rather go like to a cafe and?
We've got machines at home. So we just kind of they're quite automated. So, okay.
Yeah.
I like doing it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I just drink long black, so it's pretty basic. All right. I'll go another one. Mm-hmm. Another one for me is that when you're in as a small giant. What I find is because you've got that intimacy, because you've got that connection, because you know the people around you, and because everyone is most likely still doing the thing that they love, I find that you're around people who are very passionate.
Mm.
And that passion is in abundance.
Yeah.
So when I walk into the studio, I can feel the passion from Craig, from Dan. I can feel it from you. I can feel it from Peter when he's down from Sydney. I can feel it from all the members in my team. Yeah. I feel that passion. So when we come together, that passion radiates and it's like we radiate each other. And then we form even greater radiation, right?
Yeah.
Which feels amazing.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm just calling myself out. Could be limiting beliefs. It could be assumptions that I'm making that are wrong. But I just find that when I look in the large corporate businesses or even large entrepreneurial businesses that are still private and haven't gone kind of public, et cetera, it doesn't seem like everyone has that passion still.
Hmm.
And it doesn't, and I don't know if it's because passion's not scalable or not. I don't know what it is, but it's, then you lose that. But imagine walking into a space where everyone's still really loving what they're doing. Everyone's still doing the thing that they love. And then all of a sudden you've got that radiation of passion from everyone and it feels great.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Just as you were saying that, I really started picturing like passion as an energy.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
And I think that's what it is a lot of the times, especially in businesses.
Mm.
It's like it's nearly like an exchange of energy.
Right.
Largely created by maybe the culture, the environment, the mission, the purpose, you know, the leadership. Like that to me is where passion usually lives a lot of the time, right?
Mm.
And you're right. Like it's an important energy source.
Well, I feel like great things are created from that energy source.
Yeah.
And when you're lacking that energy source, look, you still create stuff. But I don't know if it's really great.
Again, when we think back to what we spoke about, how in a lot of business books, they talk about the early parts of the journey.
Yeah.
The reason why they talk about that side is because I think passion's probably at its
main
height.
Fuel source. Yeah.
You know, it's nearly the main thing driving into that point because there's such a high level of excitement. It's maybe even a little bit like romantic relationships, right? Like in the earlier stages, you do get a lot of like passion for free nearly, you know, while you're in the honeymoon period. Yeah. You get all that. And then the energy source. It evolves and it changes over time as well. But you're right. I think if you can maintain, you know, that element of passion, it's just it's another bonus.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if it's mandatory a lot of the times because you're right. Mm. There's probably a lot of businesses that don't have that energy.
Well, it's a continuum.
Yeah.
It's a continuum. I'm not saying that every single damn day I walk in and I'm radiating passion.
Yeah.
No, sometimes I'm radiating Greece, right? So, I don't know why. It's just hashtag Greece if you listen to this episode. But it's just sometimes I'm not radiating that at all. But I'm saying, again, there's a continuum.
Yeah.
And I look at everything as a continuum now as I'm older.
Yeah.
Is that as I look at the continuum, there's a trajectory there that is filled with passion.
Yeah.
And it's not every day. Mm-hmm. But there are so many moments of passion.
Yeah. And it's not only that as well. I think chemistry is really important too.
Mm.
You know, when you have teams that have really good chemistry.
Yeah, that's another word we tend to use. Yeah.
And again, it all comes back to exchanges of energy, right? Like passion is maybe a form of, hey, I love what I do because it's aligned to who I am.
Yeah.
Right? So that's nearly that component. But then there's also like the concept of passion or chemistry where it's like, hey, I'm really engaged and locked in right now because I just love the people that I'm doing this with right now.
Yeah.
And again, if you could find that, we spoke about it before. It's like, hey, if you can get into the heart a little bit more in terms of what you do, you can probably curate elements of passion in anything, right? It's more a state of mind or a state of being, really. Like you can get passionate about even something that you don't maybe like if you just bring a different energy to it.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't remember the analogy. You might know it better because you've got all of these, but it's nearly that thing is like, there was, you know, the story of three people and one was like, hey, I'm just a bricklayer, right? And I'm going to butcher it a little bit.
Yeah,
and then there
was
another one. Yeah. And then there was another one. But like ultimately the last one was, hey, I'm here building a wall, right? Or I'm building a house and just having a different frame on it.
Yeah, so you totally did that wrong.
Yeah, I did that so wrong. Did you know what I'm talking about though?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, which one? Yeah, there you go. So I already threw it to you before I even started.
Well, I just wanted to give you a go.
No,
thanks for that. I just wanted to give you a go. So the thing is-
throwing me under that bus.
Someone was asking this builder, so, hey, what are you building? And the person just says, oh, like, what do you do? I'm just a bricklayer. Oh, what are you doing? I'm building a wall.
Yeah.
And then another person asks another person, what are you doing? And they said, I'm building a house of God.
Yeah, that's building right. A church, that's right? The one.
Right? So
that was much better.
Yeah. Well, no, I think I didn't do it that great either. Thank you. It's a little bit better than yours. Yeah.
But mine was so bad that yours was okay.
Yeah. The contrast made mine seem great.
Yeah.
But that's you defining what you do. You being able to see past the action that you're taking and seeing the bigger picture of what you're doing.
And I guess the lesson under there is like, it's not always about what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's usually just about having the perspective shift.
Mm.
And you can do that even in the simplest things. It doesn't have to be a grand, you don't have to be playing, you know, in the NBA or running a amazing passion aligned business or anything like that.
Mm.
It could just be in anything. But if you, bring that mindset to it, who knows?
There's something that we've been talking about because, you know, if you're a long-term listener of the podcast, there's something that Ali and I are really passionate about, and it's the whole idea of recalibrate.
Mm.
You know, recalibrate is something we've been working on for the last, since 2016. Mm. It's been bloody 8 years, man.
A long journey.
And a part of that journey is we realized that, like, there's a very beautiful word that I kind of thought of. Then you thought of another one. And the one that I thought of was we want to find a way to create wholesome high performance.
Yeah.
Right? And you had another word.
Yeah, it's like heart-centered high performance.
I love that one too. Heart-centered high performance. And I think, you know, small giants is a way that I feel allows me to have wholesome high performance and heart-centered high performance, where we can be a small unit here. And I love the word small giant because it's so contradicting. It's like I can still be a really great high performer, but I'm also really wholesome.
Yeah.
And I love that kind of – I love that, you know.
And just as you were saying that, I think one of the things that you and me really value is we want very aligned and an integrated life.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think when we were younger, we had times where we were like, all right, well, if I'm here, I'm in this world.
Mm.
And then I'm only in that world. Then if I'm here, I'm in this world and I have to move away. And if I'm here, like, there was always like a contrast. It's like, you know, like I even remember feeling it when I used to work in my previous job. It's like I nearly had to be a different person in that environment. I spoke differently. I dressed differently. I acted differently.
Really?
Yeah. Because it was in alignment with the culture and values of that organization.
Right.
Right. Like there was certain expectations that you would have for how you operated. Then Friday would kick in and I'd be a completely different person. Right. Whereas I think that's one of the things that's really important to us and why we like recalibrate, because it's about integrating so many different aspects of our life so that it all kind of works together nearly seamlessly. Right. Like even, and you've done it, right? Like if you think about it, an example is how you've built your team. You know, you pretty much work with the people you love and then you hang out with them after and then you travel with them and it's all sort of in there. You know what I mean? And I think if that aligns with you, there can be beauty in that.
Yeah. And again, I think the way it relates to this book is that like this book has given me now knowledge on how I can create potentially a more wholesome path forward with my work.
Yep.
And I think the message that I really want to send our listeners as well is, you know, I'm only starting to have enough courage in my life to go, you know what, I'm going to run my business my way, build my business my way, and live my life my way. And I think what I really hope for our listeners is that at some point you find that courage too. You know, like again, even when it comes to business, it doesn't just have to be growth in every single chapter. For some chapters, you might choose quality, connection, and joy and creation over growth. And that's all right. That's all right. Whereas I used to just always have such high expectations and, oh, you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that. And I forget that far out, I am the author of my damn story. I can write whatever story I want. Yeah. And this book opened my mind up again to, oh, yeah, there's a different way to play this entrepreneurial game. Mm-hmm. So I thought, again, you know, as we wrap this episode up, yeah. I really loved this book because it gave me an alternate path. And it's something that I'm definitely going to be reading every year to remind myself of the way of the small giant.
There you go. Yeah, you've always loved this one, so it's great.
Yeah.
I think you really do embody it, so awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah. Thanks, Ali. Yeah. And any last words you have for small giants?
No.
Well, look, everyone, we just want to thank you for joining us for this episode of The Vin and Ali Show. We thank you for, you know, continuing to listen with us and learn with us. And if you feel obliged, jump over to the review page, leave us whatever review you feel we deserve. Yeah. Five. Yeah. We deserve five.
Yeah, it's four or below. Don't
worry about it. Yeah, don't worry about doing it. Yeah, save your time. It's fine. It's all good. Yeah, no. Go rate somebody else's podcast low. And we'd love to hear from you. You know, I think we'd love to hear from you, whether you reach out to us on social media or send us a quick DM. We'd love to hear from you. Anyway, we'll see you in the next episode.
Hi, hello, it's Vin. Thank you so much for listening to The Vin and Ali Show. We've created something that we're really excited about and we want to share it with you. It's called Recalibrate. It's a 12-step process that helps you create more clarity and more alignment in your life. It's the exact approach that both Ali and I have been using to live happier lives and to achieve all of our wildest dreams in the last 7 years. It's been crazy. Being one of our loyal listeners, we wanted to share a special something with you. Visit recalibrate.online/Vin and Ali to access the course for 70% off. I hope you will check it out.